This presentation may be a bit redundant to the previous one, but probably with a little different twist to it, a little different management strategies I use that are different than the dry land, but it's kind of the same principles. What I'd like to do is spend just a couple of minutes talking about the soil-water balance in key crop growth stages. Then I'd like to talk about some long-term management practices to improve stored soil water, and then some annual management practices that we can do that may or may not improve water use in rain-fed conditions. And again, I'm working mostly east of the Mississippi. Soil water balance, as Drew pointed out, again, the whole key is to maximize stored soil water. We need to maximize infiltration, minimize deep drainage losses, and minimize the evaporation of transpiration. So that's the whole key, is increasing stored soil water. But we also have to keep in mind the key growth stages of the crop. Corn, of course, has its highest evaporative demand, unfortunately, during its key growth stage when it needs water. Sometime in July, it's using about 1/4 inch per day on average, can go up to 3 to 4/10 inch per day. Soybeans, key growth stage, R3 to R55, usually occurring in August in most locations east of the Mississippi. Again, very high evaporative demand, 1/4 inch a day, 3 inches, 3/10 inch per day. And wheat, key growth stage is the anthesis period. Fortunately, usually occurring for winter wheat in May, east of the Mississippi, evaporative demand is somewhat lower, maybe 2/10, 15/100 inch per day. So we want to maximize stored soil water at these key growth stages for the crop. And some long-term management decisions that we could make, somewhat similar to maybe to what Drew proposed, field selection. We know if you were blessed or cursed with rolling topography, we know the knoll areas or the higher ground tends to be droughtier. The lower ground tends to be deeper soil profile. Also can pick up lateral drainage from uphill. So we can manage our crops that way. High ground, winter wheat, spring barley, maybe soybeans and corn on the lower ground. Of course, alfalfa requires drainage, so it's on the upper ground. So that's a strategy that can be used. Of course, it gets confounded with crop prices. Again, I've lifted this slide out of the Agronomy Journal. I don't know who did it. I apologize. Different fields under the same evaporative demand, we had about 150 millimeter difference in cumulative ET. In 99, a very dry growing season, about an 80 millimeter difference. Makes a big difference during the tasseling period. So again, as Drew suggested, we match our crops to our soil conditions. Crop selection, as I mentioned, soybeans, we need lots of stored soil water or rainfall during August. If this soil tends to be droughty, tends to be sandier, it's not going to generally will not have much stored soil water during the month of August. In contrast, something like winter wheat will be flowering late May. Generally east of the Mississippi, we have a full soil profile then. So that's an opportunity to manage your crop to avoid drought. But again, economics plays a role. If you're going to get a 35 bushel crop on that droughty soybean, on that droughty field, but the price is $10 a bushel, and you're going to get 80 bushels of wheat, but the price is only $4 a bushel, it may pay to plant soybeans even if it's on a droughty piece of ground. Again, this is a dry land situation, but as Drew pointed out, soybeans have a tendency not to, it's a weak-rooted tap system, does not get down to dry out the soil profile as efficiently as sorghum and sunflower. So again, it's a crop selection thing. Another management practice, again, a long-term management practice, is increase the organic matter of the soil. We can do that through animal waste or manure, if you're fortunate or unfortunate enough to be around lots of animal waste. We can also do it with green manure crops. This is red clover that was interseeded into wheat in March. This is what it looks like in October, providing lots of organic matter to the system. Why do we want organic matter? So if we go to our old classical soil moisture release curve with tension on the vertical bar, volumetric water content on the horizontal axis, and we have a silt loam soil with a 0.5%, 2.5%, 5%, 7.5% organic matter. If we go to 100 kilopascals, about one bar for those who are older like myself, that's when the water is getting it's not readily available. If we're at 2% moisture, 2.5% organic matter, 25% volumetric water content, 7.5% organic matter, we're at 30% volumetric water content. That's 5 percentage units difference in volumetric water content. That is huge in July. It buys you an extra 4 to 5 days. So anything we can do to build up the organic matter is a win-win situation. Crop rotation, I don't know if crop rotation gets enough credit for relieving drought. Again, the ideal crop rotation is if we had a perennial forage that could add a lot of organic matter. But even in when working with rotation such as corn following soybeans, or corn following a wheat, red clover in a soybean rotation. And here we have continuous corn. We have a soil tension at the 60 centimeter depth. For conventional tillage, moldboard, plow, and ridge till. This is Jeremy Singer's work. You'll see in both growing seasons, 93 was dry, 94 was getting dry. You see just a much more rapid dry down of that soil profile in rotated corn, be it following soybean or wheat clover, especially under a reduced tillage system, not as much under the moldboard plow. Now, lots of things could be happening. Maybe the rotated corn had more top growth. Maybe the rotated corn had a better root system. But the bottom line is you get the best response to crop rotations in dry years. You get a 25, this is for corn following something. Get a 25% yield response, 20% yield response. In the wetter years, you get maybe a 5 to 10% yield response. So something has to be happening in the soil profile, be it mycorrhizae, better exploration of water. I don't know, but there's got to be some relationship to soil water. So this is another long-term management practice that we can use if we're in regions that are susceptible to drought every second, third, fourth year. Seems to be a no-brainer, no-till, win-win-win situation. We say we want to maximize infiltration. East of the Mississippi, we get 2-3-inch rainfall events, pretty intense, over 2 hours. We want to infiltrate all that moisture. We got residue on the surface for those May to June soil torrential, rain torrential events. Get more infiltration. We get more organic matter. We're not plowing the surface, burning off the organic matter, increasing the CO2 in the environment. So we get better water holding capacity because we have more organic matter in the soil. And as Drew pointed out, we want to minimize evaporation, get the albedo effect, not as much energy for soil evaporation, plus the mulching effect. So it seems like a win-win-win situation. And it is for those soils that are well adapted to no-till. This is a study we did 20 years ago. It was in 1988, again, one of those 100-year droughts that was occurring every 3 to 5 years in the 80s and 90s. This is soil mechanical resistance in megapascals, conventional corn, ridge-till, and no-till. This was the third year it was in no-till. And we see tremendous soil mechanical resistance. It was dry, you know, it just didn't rain in June. Under the no-till situation, much higher than the conventional. About 3 is the cutoff for root growth. So this soil was not responding well to no-till in a dry year. This was, we had a gypsum blocks hooked up to a data logger, so we had daily soil water potential at the 60 centimeter soil depth. You can see conventional tillage was able to penetrate that depth and dry down the soil. There was no till and ridge till, couldn't penetrate that deep into the soil. We got a rainfall event, recharged the profile, conventional tillage using more water again. And the no-till and reduced till wasn't able to get down to that depth till 90 days after emergence. So this soil is not responding. We took photosynthesis measurements any sunny day, Monday through Saturday. Throughout that pre-silking 1 week during silking period, we're running lower individual photosynthetic rates on the leaves. Stomatal resistance was a lot higher. It was under more stress in this situation due to, it was water stress. No-till and ridge till was experiencing more water stress in a dry year on this soil. So it doesn't fit for all soils. So therefore, we want to maybe look at some annual soil management practices or management practices. And on these soils, perhaps we want to do some strip tillage. Again, this is the classic profile probably for the southeast. Again, soil mechanical resistance, you get up to 3. I think they've reduced it to 2. You get limited root growth. Subsoiled, the mechanical resistance is quite low, less than 2. Here we're getting above 3 at the 15 centimeter soil depth. So this type of soil we need to till. This is a busy slide. This is corn at the tasseling period. This is data out of Iowa. Let me just quickly say the no-till and the strip tillage were behaving similarly in soil water content. Both were able to dry down the soil better than the conventional tillage. We did some work with strip tillage in 2006, excellent growing season, 2007 a dry year. This was a field scale study. We only got a response to 7 inches. So again, these management practices tend to be site and annual specific. So there is no silver bullet, but generally, you know, if you have a pan, you're gonna get a response to strip tillage, improves root growth, improves water uptake, improves situation. Okay, hybrid selection, as Tice Tolliner clearly showed 20 years ago, modern hybrids just have much better drought tolerance. Much, much, much better drought tolerance, as well as cold tolerance, crowding tolerance, and so forth. New technology was released, the BT hybrids for corn borer, about 1997. BT corn, BT for rootworm in 2002, triple stacked in 2003. There's been some suggestions that the BT hybrids have more drought tolerance. The literature is very mixed on that. Some years there is a response. I'm not sure if it's independent of pest damage. In other years when it's been dry, there's been no response. B.L. Maher up in Guelph did document that the triple stacked with the BT for rootworm gene in a dry, on a sandy soil with no rootworm pressure, the yield was 10% higher and the root length density was longer. Just a better root length density, and he speculated that it may have better drought tolerance. Again, we did a study looking at the base genetics, doubled and triple stacked. These are field scale studies, 10-acre studies, 4 fields. 2007 was very dry, especially at these 2 sites. These guys caught rain. We did have corn borer damage up here, and we got a response, but nothing dramatic. Likewise, 2008 was an excellent growing season. The response was somewhat muted. There are drought-tolerant hybrids out there. I'm not convinced that the BT hybrids for corn borer or for rootworm confer any additional drought stress. Maybe it does. I have not seen it. Smart Stacks will be released in 2010. So we'll see what that brings. Planting date, certainly in the south, the early soybean system, where you can avoid drought again, works excellently. Probably with corn, you can work that planting date. Up north, we're locked into Once it's dry in April, ready to go. So I don't think we can manipulate planting date. This is data that we had. 91 was that second 100-year drought. We had an early planting date and a late planting date at two locations. This site, bone dry, 60 centimeters, the tensiometers had collapsed, but we picked up 2.2 inches of rain July 20th, and everything was good from there on in. At this site, we never picked anything up. We didn't get a good rainfall event. So, 90, this was our typical response, no drought stress. 91, the late planting date did better because it wasn't tasseling and silking until about July 23rd. It caught the rain. This site didn't catch the rain. It got whacked by planting late. It's hard to manage for random events. Rainfall is random. Certainly in the south, you can avoid drought. Further up north, where we do experience droughts every third year, every second year, sometimes every fourth year, it's hard to manage via planting day. Once it's the field is dry, you got to go. This was 2005, another hot, dry year. Planted soybeans May 15th, May 30th, June 15th. Expected year was 55, 50, and 40. I took this slide September 3rd. On August 30th, Katrina blew through 3 inches. The remnants of Katrina blew through 3 inches of rain. This was our 6.5 stage. Did nothing. This was our 5.5 stage. It benefited. 38, 43, 55 bushels per acre. Seeding rates. Tice Tolliner, this is a Pioneer slide. He sent it to me. Generally the same response all the way from 130 to 190 bushels per acre. Lower seeding rate response at the lower yield potential. Probably some of it is due to drought, but not all of it, I don't think. We did a study in 91 again, that infamous dry year. We had soil moisture at 3, 6, 9 plants per meter squared. We saved about 4 days in dry down by being at 3 plants per meter squared versus 9 plants per meter squared. We had photosynthetic rates in the morning and afternoon, V12, R1, R3. Throughout, the lower seeding rates did have higher single leaf photosynthetic rates. Had a leaf area index of only 2 versus 3 and 4. Drew mentioned maybe some soil evaporation losses. Modern hybrids didn't matter, ears per plant. We got knocked on kernels, kernel weight, but the yield was, our recommended seeding rate at the time was 28,000 plants per acre. And then the next year we had a great year, it did the same. Certainly down south, out west, I think you need to adjust your seeding rate. Further up north where the evaporative demand is lower, a lot lower, I just go with one seeding rate regardless of the soil, the conditions. We're at 32, seems to do best in dry and wet years. I think I'm getting close to being out of time, so 2 minutes. With weed control, with our Roundup Ready products, lots and lots of post-emergence applications now. Question is, you know, how much does this interfere? How much soil water is it using? We can't pull it out. There's a feeling it's affecting light quality, dominance of plants, and so forth. But certainly it has to have an impact on soil water conditions. In our dry year, when we delayed it, the application from the V4 to the V6 stage on corn, that kernel number went way down, way down. In the wet year, it went down, but not as significantly. And the yield took a much bigger hit by delaying that application. We lost 37% versus 15%. Has to do something with soil water also. I don't think it's pure dominance of plants and so forth. Nitrogen, don't mess with it in the Northeast. Thank you very much. I think I'm out of time, and I hope I didn't go too fast.
We have time for one question.
No problem.
I work in drought tolerance in soybean. We had a problem this summer where
It appeared that we had compaction through the season that greatly affected the response to drought later in the season. Would you just care to comment if you had experiences like that?
We did not have compaction, but it's a weak tap-rooted system. I took neutron probe measurements 25 years ago on soybeans and sunflower, and soybeans just can't compete if there was any, we were on a heavy soil. It just couldn't get down there as well. So yeah, it's very, very vulnerable, susceptible to soil compaction. It will experience drought stress, even though you got a soil profile that's full from 90 to 180.